Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welsh, and on these podcasts, we examine different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Now, today we are going to look at one of the more infamous aspects of the Civil War in Ireland, the so-called Big House Burnings. In a nutshell, this was the burning of the landed estate mansions around the country as an element of warfare. It reached its grim zenith in the spring of 1923. To focus particularly on County Kilkenny, this was namely the destruction of Dysart Court near Coffs Grange and Besborough House in Piltown. You will also be aware that a third house had been destroyed the previous July at the beginning of the Civil War, that being of course Woodstock House in Innistigue, which we covered in a previous podcast. However, the story about why each of these houses was destroyed are all different. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to understanding this. Each house was targeted on its own merits, so to speak. And neither side of the Civil War divide is guiltless in regards to the destruction of these houses in County Kilkenny. Now, in regards to the public's reaction into these happenings, we need to take a number of factors into account. Today, we look at images and pictures of these beautiful architectural masterpieces that these houses were that have since vanished from the landscape, and we truly believe it's an awful waste. And it was. And just in regards to craftsmanship and effort that went into building these houses, it was enormous. This extended to the fixtures and fittings of the big houses, from the handcrafted doors to the hand-blown glass windows, from the staircases to the light fittings and the plasterwork ceilings, to the individual pieces of handcrafted furniture. Everything in these big houses was made by skill and talent, and of course mostly made by hand. It was an era before mass production. So in other words, the material loss of the big house usually was more than just the physical house alone. And we didn't even mention the works of art that hung from the walls of these stately houses. However, we must also look at the destruction of the big houses from the other point of view, from the perspective of some of the tenant farmers. Their families, often for multiple generations, had been paying rent to these landlords, the owners of these big homes. It was their hard graft in farming year on year that enabled tenant farmers to pay the rent, which in turn supported the big house. Many of the big houses were built in the building boom of the early Georgian era, from around 1720 to 1750. This included the homes in question here, Dysart, Woodstock and Besborough houses. So they were all nearly 200 years old. These houses were a symbol of your status, and many tried to outdo each other with their architecture, design and later on the gardens surrounding the house. The people that built the big houses were often the grandsons or great-grandsons of Cromwellian settlers from the 1650s, i.e. Cromwell's soldiers who were given vast tracts of land in Ireland in lieu of payment for the Irish Wars. This is true, of course, of the Ponsonby family who owned Besborough House in Piltown and who provided Cromwell with his horses during the wars. And it also included the Coffs of Dysart Hall, whose ancestor was one of Cromwell's officers. The Ponsonbys, or the Earls of Besborough as they were known, had estates that reached over 25,000 acres at one point. So to surmise, if you were a tenant farmer, you may not have lost too much sleep in seeing these big houses being destroyed as you slumbered in your humble thatch cottage. That world was far removed from your own. But of course, views were different from person to person and indeed from landlord to landlord, depending how well liked they were in a specific area. Now, before we talk about the Kilkenny Big House burnings in February 1923, I will just give the national context of things in relation to the subject. So it's estimated that nearly 300 big houses were destroyed during the revolutionary period in Ireland. These homes were usually owned by landed aristocratic families, but were burned for a myriad of reasons. Some were destroyed as their owners were considered unionist or pro-British, and they often hindered the work of the local IRA in some way. Some of the big houses were actually used as British Army barracks and later Free State garrisons, so were seen as legitimate targets. Woodstock House in Inishtigue being a case in point here. Some houses were destroyed in reprisal for the arrest or death of local IRA men. It's possible some were destroyed simply as a form of score settling, hitting back at an unpopular landlord or whatever, with grievances sometimes stretching back to the land war era of the 1880s. The majority of destruction, however, were within the first months of 1923 during the Civil War. Many of these houses were destroyed in retaliation for their owners being involved with the new Free State government in some way. In December 1922, the anti-Treaty IRA leadership compiled a hit list of homes of the newly installed senators. The Senate had just been formed in December 1922. It was then up to the local anti-Treaty units to destroy these houses in retaliation for associating with the new Free State government. Nearly 40 of these senators' homes were destroyed during this period, a huge amount of destruction. One of the homes likely on this hit list was in Kilkenny. Ellen Cuff, the Dowager Countess of Dysart, was one of the new senators and was appointed by local TD William T. Cosgrave. Although she had moved out of Dysart Court over 20 years previously upon the death of her husband, Dysart Court was known as the seat of the Cuff family in Ireland and was most likely on the list because of that. In 1923, it was occupied by Lady Dysart's brother-in-law, Hamilton Cuff, the 5th Earl of Dysart, who was then the current Earl, along with his wife. The house was located about 10 kilometres southwest of Kilkenny City, near the village of Cuff's Grange in kind of the Kilmana direction. It was a beautiful Palladian mansion built in 1733 and was quite unusual even for the time. It was designed by Edward Lovett Pierce, who is famous for designing the Irish Houses of Parliament on College Green in Dublin, now the Bank of Ireland, of course, and that was actually the first purpose-built parliament in the world. An interesting connection was that Dysart Court was where local man James Hoban, architect of the White House in Washington, D.C., of course, received some of his early training. Noticing his talents and gifts, the family sponsored him to complete his studies in Dublin, and the rest, as they say, is history. He became a good friend with George Washington after he was commissioned to build the White House. Indeed, the White House actually has lots of similarities with the Irish stately home of the Georgian era, and James Hoban must certainly have been inspired by Dysart Hall in his youth. Now, back to 1923. The current Earl of Dysart, Hamilton Cuff, along with his sister-in-law, were very well known in the Kilkenny area. The Earl's late brother, Captain Otway Cuff, had been an active organiser of the Gaelic League in Kilkenny City. He too had been supported by his sister-in-law, Ellen Cuff, Lady Dysart, who helped finance many enterprises. At this time, Lady Dysart, the Dowager Countess of Dysart, Ellen Cuff, actually lived in Aus Even, which had been her home for the previous few decades. Lady Dysart had been made a free woman of Kilkenny in 1910. She had established many enterprises in the city to support local workers, along with supporting the establishment of the local library on John's Quay. And of course, she helped fund the Kilkenny Theatre. Although she had been against the vote for women, she felt they should avoid that sphere at all costs. She ended up becoming the first Jewish member of the Irish Oireachtas and just one of four women in this first Senate, which was established in December 1922, as we mentioned previously. Now, because of her acceptance of the seat in the new Shannon, the Cuff ancestral home at Dysart was seemingly on this anti-treaty hit list. Her brother-in-law was probably not too happy with this turn of events. He had not been really involved in the political situation in Ireland during the previous years. It is also not known why her home in Aught Even was not burnt instead, but perhaps it was decided that the seat of the Cuff family in Ireland should be the main target. So I suppose as senators' homes all around the country started to be destroyed one by one, it was really only a matter of time. And so it turned out. On Thursday night, the 22nd of February 1923, Kilkenny Anti-Treaty IRA men entered the mansion at about 10:30 p.m. The Earl at this time was actually in England, although he would usually spend a large portion of the year in Kilkenny. Now, the only occupants of the house were two maid servants and the elderly gardener of the estate. They were ordered to take their belongings and leave the house at once. The anti-treaty IRA began hacking and breaking the furniture then, before piling it into the centre of the rooms. Certain windows were then smashed in each of the rooms to allow a kind of a draft to get through the building. Petrol was then sprinkled all around the rooms and all over the piles of furniture. Once all the occupants had left, the building was then set on fire. Most of the building was destroyed except for one of the wings. Now, the furniture and artwork that were in this wing where the fire didn't take hold were salvaged. No doubt the Earl was thankful for this small mercy. 1 month later, a van and a 4-ton lorry arrived at Dysart Court to transport what remained of the furniture and artwork to Kilkenny train station for onward delivery to England. But before they had even reached the village of Coffs Grange, the vehicles were stopped by armed anti-treaty men. The drivers were ordered to get out of the lorry and van. Petrol was then poured over the furniture and paintings in the back, and the whole lot was set alight. Once the fire took hold, the petrol tanks in both of the vehicles exploded, destroying the van and the lorry. This time, the furniture artwork did not escape the flames. The haulage contractor from Kilkenny City who owned the lorry, Tom Welch, had been hired by a number of aristocratic homeowners in the area to transport their valuables to England at this time. This was perceived as an affront by the anti-treaty IRA, as there was a belief that this property belonged to Irish people, in other words, the tenant farmers who provided much of the wealth to the landed gentry for generations. Thus, they did not want to see it leaving the country. Hence, the Earl of Dysart drew the short straw once again, while Tom Welch could no longer provide the transport service, which was kind of the point, I would guess, of the anti-treaty IRA. The only IRA man to put in his application that he was involved in the burning and was there on the night of the burning of Dysart was Michael Marr, who was from Ballylarkin and later the Commons in Callan. He became Vice Commandant of the 7th Battalion and at one stage was the Acting Commandant of the 7th Battalion towards the end of the Civil War. Now, the Earl of Dysart later received £12,709 in compensation from the Irish Free State to rebuild the house. That would be about 1.1 million euros in today's money, although he actually had estimated his losses to be nearly double that at £22,259. He did, though, receive additional compensation later for the loss of his artwork and furniture. Like a phoenix from the ashes, the new Dysart Court was completed within 5 years of its destruction, much to the delight of many, it must be said. However, tragically, this new house was allowed to fall into disrepair after the Land Commission acquired the estate and distributed the lands to local farmers. The Land Commission really had no use for these big houses. So even though the new Dysart Hall was less than 30 years old, it was demolished in 1957. Now, this brings us on to Bessborough House in Piltown. It was set alight just one night after the Dysart fire, which was probably more than a coincidence, which we'll talk about later. Bessborough House was located just outside the village of Piltown in the far south of County Kilkenny. And on the night of the 23rd of February 1923, it was set on fire. It was owned by Vere Ponsonby, the 9th Earl of Bessborough. It was built in the 1740s, so nearly 200 years old at this stage, for the 1st Earl. It was designed by Francis Bindon, the same architect responsible for Woodstock House in Inisteague, where his daughter had married into. However, in 1923, the 9th Earl wasn't really that well known in the area. He had just inherited the estate from his father, who had died in 1921. The new Earl and his French wife had handed over the day-to-day running of the estate to the steward and to the servants and workers who lived on the estate. These servants were supervised by the local parish priest, Father Phelan in Piltown, who checked in on them on behalf of the Earl. And actually, just a few months previously, the Earl had offered to give land opposite the new parish church in Piltown to act as a graveyard for the Catholics of the parish. This bit of land was part of the large Besborough estate, but it's still in use today as the new graveyard, as it's called, in Piltown. The 9th Earl of Besborough was also the chairman of Unilever's, a big company in England, and also an electric company in the southeast of England. He'd also been a member of Parliament for Cornwall, so he had his hands full. Now, since the War of Independence, Besborough House was often used as a resting place by IRA columns. At one stage, a Ford motor car and lorry were even taken from the estate. From witness statements, we know that 2 years earlier, in the spring of 1921, during the height of the War of Independence troubles, flying columns and IRA men on the run had rested at the estate too. When the Civil War kicked off in June and July 1922, a large amount of anti-treaty men, maybe even up to 100, based themselves there before the Battle of Carrick on Shore moved them on further into Munster. Now, the Besborough estate produced a large quantity of food, including apples, beef, mutton, pork, eggs, wheat, oats. So this was also a bonus for the IRA, if not the main reason for stopping there in the first place. Relative to the time, the food and supplies there were plentiful. And the IRA would have felt that they weren't taking the food out of the mouths of starving children or the like, but instead from a wealthy landowner. And it would appear that during the Civil War, as it moved on, the anti-treaty IRA continued to use the house and estate as a base from time to time. Now, it is not clear from the records who was letting them into the house or if it was done under duress, even though this is most likely. In other words, it's not certain whether a servant or servants were supportive of the IRA or whether they thought it best to follow the orders of men with guns. It's likely they weren't too enamoured with their regular visitors, as it was their livelihoods that were being put at risk if the Earl decided to sell up or if anything happened to the farm or to the house. But either way, the staff appear to have grown somewhat accustomed to their frequent visitors. Now, the Free State Army in South Kilkenny were losing patience with the anti-treaty IRA by this stage at the end of February 1923. The burning of Dysart Court the day before made national headlines. Also, in the days leading up to this, there had been attacks on two local railway stations. Grange Station in Munkine had been burnt down, while there was also an attempt to ignite Fadown railway station near Piltown. Consequently, in a fairly unusual occurrence for the time, we believe it was the Free State forces in the area who most likely decided to destroy the local big house. Thus, Besborough House was burnt down not for any ideological reasons, but purely to deprive the anti-treaty IRA of its main base in South Kilkenny. Now, we don't know who signed off, if anyone signed off on this decision from Free State Command. Maybe it was just the local command in South Kilkenny, or even just in Munkine, which is the local Free State barracks, or Carrick on Shore, who decided they need to make a statement of intent. Quite literally, fighting fire with fire. It's quite possible commands were given verbally and not written down, so we just don't really know. Either way, the burning of Besborough House would have had an added benefit for the Free State, as the anti-treaty side would most likely get the blame for the wanton destruction if they did it or not. However, it doesn't really make sense that the anti-treaty IRA would have any reason for burning down Besborough House, as it was not on any anti-treaty hit list like Dysart, and the Earl had little or nothing to do with Irish domestic politics. And as we said, it was a very, very useful base for the IRA to get rest and, of course, supplies. The Free State soldiers could also possibly justify the destruction of Bessborough House, as the Earl and his family hadn't really lived there for years. And of course, they wouldn't be stuck without a roof over their heads over in England. In addition, the farming of the vast estate lands would continue. So those local workers, they believed, wouldn't be out of a job. Of course, we can only surmise the logic at this stage. So just to talk specifically about what happened that night, on Friday the 23rd of February 1923, 30 likely Free State soldiers entered the house. They were dressed in civilian clothing to disguise the fact they were from the National Army. All those inside were told to leave. Then the windows were smashed and the house was covered in petrol before it was set alight. The fire lit up the night sky for miles around, with flames said to have reached 50 feet into the air at one stage. Very little remained of the house by the following morning, as it was completely gutted. The charred ruins of Bessborough House became something of a morbid tourist attraction in the area during the following weeks, with people taking Sunday trips to the estate just to see the burnt down house. Luckily for him, the Earl had moved much of the valuable furniture and the extensive art collection to his homes in England during the course of the previous years, fearing an event like the one that transpired. Although the farming could continue on the estate, the workforce, which was estimated to be up to 100 people, were nervous of what would happen next. The wage bill paid to the workers annually was estimated to be at least £5,000, which was a huge amount of money injected into the local economy in Piltown and surrounding areas. And of course, those 100 workers would be supporting hundreds of their family members. Many of the staff too were also members of the well-known Bessborough cricket team, so there was a whole community built around the estate. In the direct aftermath of the destruction of the house, all the workers held a meeting and eventually came to a resolution of sympathy, which they forwarded onto the Earl. The Earl of Bessborough was naturally livid following the destruction of his house and demanded the Free State government rebuild Bessborough to the exact designs of the original home. Perhaps this is a clue that he knew the likely cause of its destruction, or at least he may have heard rumours that soldiers of the government could have been responsible for its destruction. He estimated the total financial loss was upwards of £100,000. All fittings and furniture were also to be replaced. The reconstruction was eventually acceded to by the near-bankrupt Free State government. It was perhaps the nearest admission of guilt as to the Free State Army's involvement in the destruction of the house, something that was never admitted publicly. The total cost eventually paid by the state was £51,422. This was by far the highest amount paid for Civil War damage in Kilkenny during the Revolutionary era, and would be the equivalent of over €3 million in today's money. Now, it should be noted that this compensation covered a wide inventory of losses and not just the house itself. For example, trees that were cut down on the estate, maybe for the IRA to block roads or something, were compensated for. For instance, £4 was paid out for oak trees that were cut on the estate, £2 for deal trees, and £20 was paid out for heavy birch trees that were cut on the estate. £3 was also paid out for a cross-cut saw that was stolen or went missing. And even £30 was paid out for wine that was taken from the vaults of Bessborough House. Compensation was also given for animals that were slaughtered or went missing on the estate, most likely to feed the hungry IRA men. This included £21 for sheep and £28 for a bullock. Of the £51,422 paid out, £16,744 of that was for the furniture and fittings. The Earl himself supervised the rebuild in Piltown. When the new Bessborough House was finally completed in 1929, government ministers arrived for the formal unveiling. Afterwards, the Earl of Bessborough was quoted as saying, "I will never enter this accursed house again." And he was true to his word, as he never again returned to Piltown. The Earl had in fact purchased Stanstead House in West Sussex in 1924, which became the family's main home. And the Earl was actually made the Governor General of Canada by the King in 1931. He sold Bessborough to the Oblates of Mary Immaculate Religious Order in 1940, which they used as a seminary. Actually, over 300 priests were trained in the house over the next 30 years. In 1971, then, the estate was sold to the Department of Agriculture. Kildaltan College, the well-known and largest agricultural college in the country right now, is now centred around Bessborough House and its lands. In 1971, the Department of Agriculture paid 250,000 Irish pounds for the Bessborough estate, a bargain in today's money. So that covers the big house burnings in Kilkenny. Three big houses were burnt for three different reasons, as we discussed. Woodstock House, covered on the previous podcast because it was a Free State Army base. Dysart Court as a punishment to a new Free State senator, and Bessborough in an act of retaliation by the Free States against the anti-Treaty IRA, who had just burnt down Dysart Court but were also using Bessborough to launch attacks and cause havoc in the local area. And I think that's where we'll leave it for today, just to thank you all once again for listening. And don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time.